tight ship right around here.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Wolfpack Podcast. My name is Tyler Wolf and I'm your host. I'm here with Jaron Klopstein. How you doing, Jaron?
Greatest day of my life. How you doing?
Good. This is the first time you've done a podcast, right?
Very first one.
All right. Something I've been wanting to ask ever since I got your number in my phone, because then I got the last name. Are you Jewish?
No. See, if I was Jewish, it would be Steen.
Steen. Well, that's why
I'm German, right? So it's Stein.
Oh, dude, that's so funny. So I didn't realize that there were German last names that were so close to Jewish.
Very close. Yeah. I don't know the cultural or the historical reason for that, but
yeah,
I get more Steens than Steins. But
yeah,
I get texts.
These episodes release at 2 a.m. every Friday. They have for the past 3 or 4 years. And I get texts routinely on Friday mornings at like 6 a.m. from people that listen. To say, like, here's why you're an idiot. And I just feel, and Kyle O'Brien's not one of them. He's never called me an idiot. He's always very, very kind. But Kyle O'Brien from the gym, I just feel like someone is going to correct what I just said about the Jewish and German.
Probably right. It's not going to be me, because even though I'm the one who should know, since it's my last name,
yeah.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
So, okay, so I met you at Open Guard.
Yep.
What's your deal? Where are you from? What do you do for a living? Tell me a little bit about your life.
Yeah. Lived all over the Midwest. Live just down the street in Heartland now. So lived in Heartland for a couple years now with my wife. Bought a house out there after living in the city downtown Milwaukee for way too long. But lived all over the Midwest.
What part of downtown?
East side, you know. Bounced nice. Just kind of couple. We got bored of an apartment after 1 year. So we lived in probably 6 different places, 6 years. You know, Van Buren, Water Street, that area. It's fantastic. We kept down there for 1 year too long. We said, we're going to live here 1 more year. We're getting old. Let's give it a hurrah. And then COVID happened. So we spent all of lockdown in a 800 square foot apartment, which was terrible.
Wow. In downtown, huh?
Terrible. Worst place to be.
Really?
Yeah. Coming out here was like COVID versus the city was a very different experience.
You guys bought your house out there?
Yeah.
We lived on the north side of Milwaukee for our first year of marriage. 91st and Appleton.
Yeah,
I love it out there.
Dude. It's great. I mean, there's tons to do. You know, you never get bored. There's always action. Coming out here, the pros, it's really quiet. We've got space. We've got a yard. You know what I mean? But
had you started jiu-jitsu when you were there?
I did. I did jiu-jitsu down there for a very short period of time. I lived within walking distance of Neutral Ground, John Friedland's place.
Yeah, right.
Which is where I first started. Fantastic. Great academy. He's obviously got a wealth of knowledge. Rolled with him a few times.
And did he really?
Yeah. Just cool. A couple. You know how it goes.
Yeah. And that's a dude I want to get on my show, actually.
Oh, he's great.
He just seems like an interesting person.
Great character. Really nice guy. You know, don't judge a book by his cover. He's super nice. And I trained there for a couple months. I don't remember the exact timeline was. And then, you know, some work stuff happened. My wife and I were trying to figure out where we wanted to settle down. We actually moved to Madison for a year. Remote work, so we can kind of live anywhere. And never picked it up. Over there, came back to Milwaukee, never picked it up again until Open Guard about 18 months ago, and love it.
Dude, I'm so lucky to have a flexible enough job that I can make it to a noon class once, sometimes twice a week. I can get in, train, get back to work, and you're in that noon class crew. Yep. And I was just talking to Lori, who owns and operates Open Guard, just for the listeners, you know, about how it's an awesome thing to have such a good noon class. You can get in there, take the class, do like 10 minutes of rolling and have an awesome workout and actually have like a challenging role. It's like, I think if something happens and jiu-jitsu becomes illegal, you know, or whatever happens, you know, we're going to realize, Hey, honey. I told you to stay out of here. I'm just kidding.
Unannounced guest. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Is he sleeping? No.
I hear him.
All right, I'll get him. This is showbiz, babe.
Yeah.
This is showbiz, baby. My wife just popped in. She's leaving. I'm on a lunch break right now. Anyways, what was I saying?
You're talking about noon class.
I'm just grateful for what a good noon crew we have.
It's such a good crew. You know, I enjoy it because so many of us are at similar levels, which, you know, I get it. We probably should be getting more exposure to higher belts and that sort of thing. Of course, you know, we've got blue belts and some of our instructors and stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people in the class started within 6 months of each other, right? And so just, you know, there's sort of this, I don't know, it's a pretty tight-knit crew. I feel like everybody's kind of invested in everybody's success, but everybody still wants to win their roles. You know what I mean? So they're competitive, but not dangerous.
Yeah.
And it's just, to me, it's such a good way to break up a day. You know what I mean?
100%. Well, and I treat, if I'm going to train, let's just say I'm able to do a noon class and then teach kids class at night, I treat noon class like a workout. Like
yeah.
I'm going to train really, really hard. And then at night, I try to treat that as I'm going to focus solely on technique.
Yeah.
Now, I think I'm probably going to evolve and change and realize it's a bad idea for whatever reason and all these different things. But that's just how I go right now.
I'm trying as I, you know, now a year and a half in, still don't know anything about jiu-jitsu in the scheme of things. But I think over the last 6 months, I've tried to involve more, you know, knowledge growth in my game because, you know, with the guys in that crew, like I said, it does get competitive, but I think a lot of us now are evolving to the point where we're not having battles to the death.
Yeah.
And so the roles can actually be a little bit more focused on slowing down technique and that sort of thing. And at 36, like I have to have that. I'll never, you know, if I go 3 days a week really hard with some of that crew, I can feel it.
Yeah.
You know, I can feel it.
Yeah. Well, I had about 35 minutes of hard rolls last night.
Yeah.
And I was texting you saying, I don't know if I can grapple today because I did this one back take and then he tried to dump me and I caught myself with my head. And it was one of those, it wasn't like a stinger. I've never actually had that. I never played football or anything like that. But it was like that. It was like, oh, that, a lot of things just compressed that were
you,
not good.
You base off your head a lot too. So
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to regret it one day, yeah. But we're having a good time. I will say, and but so, I wonder if you relate with this. I rolled with this guy last night, and I did well. I won. So I'm not going to bounce around with the semantics about is it winning and whatever. I submitted him several rounds in a row, and he said, good job. And I just said, I can't enjoy this. Hmm. And he's like, why? And I was all out of breath, and then I walked to my truck. And by the time I got to my truck, I had articulated it. I thought to myself, if I win, submit somebody several rounds in a row, in my head, that means they're having an off day.
Yeah.
Like I can't let myself be like, wow, you're good or you're getting better or whatever. I go, oh, something must be wrong with them.
Well, I mean, obviously everybody who trains has had those days. You're the hammer, you're the nail,
100%.
Right? Sometimes as Josh, one of our students has said, sometimes you're the thumb. All that's yeah. True. Right. I mean, having had those days where, you know, everybody kind of knows where they stack up against somebody else. And so if you have a day where they're constantly subbing you or you're constantly getting them, you know, I think that's the ebb and flow of jiu-jitsu naturally. But I think, you know, I think the way I tend to look at that is like, what's my baseline against this person typically and how am I performing against them today?
Yeah,
if I'm subbing someone that normally this is pretty an equal battle.
Yeah.
You know, if I catch you 10 times in a row, you're having an off day because I might catch you 1 out of 10.
Sure.
If I catch you 2 out of 10, I feel like I can baseline myself against myself.
Right? Yeah.
Say I've had a better day, but my results aren't so non-typical that it's because Tyler's off.
Sure. You
know, or something along those
lines. I mean, this probably translates to life somehow, but I would rather, if I roll with someone 10 times, I would be able to enjoy it more if I beat them 4 or 5 of those times than if I beat them 10.
Even if you have 3 years more experience than that person.
Yeah, 100%.
Really?
Well, I think you have to, well, if it's like a, you know what, I stand by that Gracie rule of 10-20, where it's if they're 10 years younger than you, 20 pounds heavier, each one of those things is they're gonna feel in difficulty like another belt higher.
That's right.
So a white belt that's 10 years younger, 20 pounds heavier is gonna feel like you're rolling against a purple belt or whatever.
As a 36-year-old 5'9 man, I pull that card every chance I get.
Yeah.
every chance I get.
Yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah, whatever. I mean,
hey, listen, you gotta give yourself, you know, have some ledges you can grab onto in the sport.
Some of these guys are good, man. That's why we just got a bunch of new blue belts and a couple of them, one in particular, and I keep on giving him a hard time for this, Antonio.
Oh, Antonio's really good.
I go, dude, I'm so glad you're a blue belt now. Not only because I'm happy for you, but because I'm happy for me, because it does not bother me so much how much you smash me.
Some of it is, of course, size, athleticism, age, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, some people just have just more natural inclinations. Of course, if you wrestled in high school and that sort of thing. But I get it. I mean, there are just certain people, you know, in the gym that you are going to give yourself a harder time if that person beats you than another person. A lot of that having to do with like when they started the journey versus you did. But, you know, as I know you've said, as Dan used to say all the time, you just got to compare your progress against yourself, which is one of the hardest things in the world to do after you've had a day where you're just getting subbed, beat. Yeah. It's so hard to do.
Yeah. A little trick I started doing is if I go into the gym and I can tell that I am over caring about winning, I will go out and just for one round, I don't let people win except for when I feel that way.
Yeah.
I'll go out and I will put up a fight, but then I will lose intentionally. And most guys, I don't need to lose intentionally. I lose unintentionally. My point is I will go out and no matter who it is, I will lose intentionally to remind myself that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And all it takes is one. And I go, oh yeah, nothing has changed in my life. Nothing has changed in the world. And then I give 100% after that. But there's just something. I think we're just apes, man.
Well, and I think jiu-jitsu, like wrestling, any combat sport or any individual sport, there's a unique element to it like that because I grew up playing team sports my whole life. So you can have an off day in a team sport. Lacrosse was my sport. Doesn't matter. Basketball, football, baseball. You've got the rest of your team to pick you up. Mm-hmm. You have an off day in something like jiu-jitsu or wrestling or any martial art. There's nobody. You have nobody but yourself. I had a business partner who was a really accomplished wrestler, and he used to tell me this. Wrestling made a huge impact on my professional career because when you're in the trenches and you're having a bad time, you've got nobody to dig deep to call on but yourself.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you're in those roles, even if it's noon class, it's very easy to get lost in the importance of that moment as you're grappling. Right. But I think, you know, as you pull yourself out of it, it's like, what am I worried about? It's just me and a bunch of other middle-aged dudes running around in pajamas and nothing's changing. This doesn't define who I am or anything like that. But, you know, I think a lot of people can get caught up in that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to grapple, but so here's what I want to do. I want to ask you a question and then we'll grapple and then we'll finish the episode and we'll get to resources, which is the heart of the whole show. What was a time before the age of 12 that you got in huge trouble?
I can remember there was a time I was in elementary school. We lived in Hilliard, Ohio.
Okay.
And we used to play street hockey all the time. Love street hockey, rollerblades, right? Plastic sticks, 100%. All that stuff. We lived
Franklin,
on a cul-de-sac.
Probably.
What's that?
Franklin,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Lived on a cul-de-sac. It was perfect. So I had all of these like hockey sticks without the plastic blades on them, just sitting around the garage from changing them out and that sort of thing. Don't remember the circumstances of what happened, but boys were being boys, and I remember me and another kid were frustrated about something that one of the other neighborhood kids had done. And, you know, we weren't going to do anything, but we were all talk about it. Like, hey, we got to go find where he's at. And I grabbed one of those hockey sticks and we were standing in between the houses, and me and my buddy that we were with, I remember we were kind of, you know, talking tough, and I said, yeah, and this is what we're going to do. And I swung that stick around as hard as I could, and I just obliterated his face with the stick.
Dude.
And he had to get stitches. It was bad. And it was a total accident.
Yeah.
But I was being a reckless idiot nonetheless. And it did not sit well.
Did you get arrested?
No. It was, you know, all good. No, you know, no involvement outside of the family's total mistake. But my parents were furious at me for being such a negligent jerk and, you know, just getting lost in the moment and letting my emotions get the best of me.
Full permission to just say no and lie if you absolutely don't want to answer. You ever been arrested?
No, never.
Never.
Honestly, I wouldn't have a problem saying it if I had.
Well, like, I know, but if you're like, I mean.
Yeah, I get it. Like, yeah, you're, you know, trying to maintain your image and all that sort of stuff.
Because there's either a great story there or one that you just don't want to share.
No, I've, you know, my brother's a cop.
He's purple belt too, right?
Yeah, he is. And he's a U.S. Marshal. So I've never been arrested. If I was, he'd be the first person I'd call. I've had buddies get arrested for the things that young guys get arrested for, DUIs, you know, that sort of stuff. But I personally have never been handcuffed or put in the back of a police car.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a rough past. I got arrested for the first time. I was detained for the first time in seventh grade. And then I got an underage drinking ticket when I was 18. I went to jail when I was maybe 20. And I think that was it. Yeah, I think that was it. I did it for all the crime. And I talked about this on my episode of the podcast. By the time this releases, it'll be 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Dude, when I went on that Vietnam trip, I had this moment on the back of this moped flying through the streets of Saigon where I just thought, I was like, to get here, I had to have a passport. To get a passport, I did not have felonies. And of all the felonies I've been involved with,
yeah,
there has just been protection on my life. And I was so grateful, dude.
Isn't that amazing?
All that to circle back to. Yep. Yes, I've been to jail. Yes, I've been arrested. But it could have been way worse than it was.
Yeah. 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 And you even, I know you've been arrested because you used the word detain, which yeah. is said by somebody who's been through the system. Yeah.
Why are you detaining me? We have this thing in our house. I have two sons. And there's this video of this girl getting arrested. And she's going, "Why are you detaining me? Why are you detaining me?" And then she starts saying, "You were about to lose your job." And it's so funny because me and my 7 and 3-year-old and my wife will just be singing this song like, "You're about to lose your job and why are you detaining me?" It's ridiculous. Okay, you ready to grapple?
I'm ready.
All right, man, let's do it. All right, we're back. So we just grappled for probably 20 minutes.
Yeah.
How you feel?
I feel good. How many of those did you... have to let me win so that you didn't feel like
that was important. That was a Jaron W sandwich. You got the first and the last round fair and square too. It was when you tapped me in our first round, I was worried that after the philosophy I had just shared that you would think I gave it to you.
I know, because the first thing you told me was I didn't let you have that one.
I did not let you have that because you got me the last one was an anaconda.
Yep.
And the first one was
just a rear naked.
Rear naked choke. Yeah. You took the back.
And if it makes you feel better, the middle 5 or 6 that you had on me, I didn't let you get any of those either. So fair.
Dude. We were just, before I started recording, we were talking about how we just trained no gi, but I would have been glad to train in the gi. And I will say, since Dan died, not even consciously, but since his heart attack, because obviously he was in the hospital for a month or whatever. From the time he had his heart attack until right about now, I was just, here's my theme music. I was just rolling.
Yeah.
Very little emphasis on technique at all.
Right.
And a little bit here and there, but most part I was just like, let me get in there. Let me be with people and train really, really hard. And most of that since June 5th until now was in no gi. And just this month, I'm like really enjoying the gi.
Was that part of your like healing process to just
not? I'm sure. Yeah. I think exercise has always been that for me, really therapeutic. But I think I was just, so much of my mental energy was put towards grief and also the community of Open Guard and then not to mention my work and family and everything. Right. That I was just, let me get in here and just smash and get smashed. You know, just go, you know?
Yeah.
So apologies to anybody that had to roll with me. I didn't use much etiquette probably for the last 6 months. But all that to say, dude, I'm really enjoying the gi lately.
I mean, there was a stretch there. Obviously noon class is a gi class, but, you know, when we stick around for live mat, it's, I would say the first 10% of open mat is gi, and then everybody kind of sheds the gi. But
yeah,
you know, I mean, I think you probably like me. I tend to kind of go in waves with it. You know what I mean? It's just I don't do a lot of no gi classes.
Yeah, me neither.
But I enjoy grappling no gi.
Yeah, you know? Well, I think that makes sense when you're taking a gi class, if that's just what your schedule allows, to then train out of the gi afterwards, because you gotta get that variety in
100%. It's the same techniques in the gi, out of the gi. You know, anybody who trains, I'm not telling them anything they don't know. I mean, the nuances of the differences of it are very real. You know what I mean? And and again, for anybody who I think rolls with somewhat of an interest in self-defense, you got to get a little of both. You know, it's like I'm not probably gonna run into somebody who's trying to do harm to me that's running around in corduroy and in a gi, but you know, they're also not gonna be wearing spandex either, so
I think the gi simulates the friction of street clothes better than no gi.
Yeah,
but obviously you don't have all the grips, though you do have some of them. I don't know, maybe I should just have the debate about it, but I'd get so
About which one?
But yeah, and I just get annoyed by it.
It's I think that's a vogue thing to do right now, to be, obviously no-gi is much sexier right now, you know what I mean? And I think like the B-team guys have a lot to do with that. And I get it. I mean, it's fun to make fun of the gi and everybody's cosplaying feudal Japan and that sort of stuff. But you can't, I mean, it's fun to roll in. There's just more grips and things that you can play with. And that's enjoyable. I mean, it's fun.
The Wolfpack Podcast is a show where if you have something smart to say, somebody probably already said it better. And I'll tell you, I'm really glad you're here because I am. This is my dream realized. I bought these mats from a karate gym that was upgrading, and I put it down here, and I built the mat space into my studio space. And this is what I've always pictured, that when I have people from the gym here to podcast, we would grapple and then talk. And this is the first time I've actually been able to do it.
I'm sure you've had other... I know you've had other grapplers because I've seen some of them on the podcast before.
Yeah, Forrest has been on the show on Blue Belt Weekend. I had Dan on twice in the couple years before he passed. I'm trying to get Lori on. She'll come on eventually, I'm sure.
Does she listen?
I don't think so.
Hi, Lori.
No, she does sometimes. Yeah, no, she's mentioned it to me. Yeah. By the way, can you say sup, Sally?
Sub Sally?
Sup.
Sup, Sally?
Like, what's up?
What's up, Sally?
That's my mom.
Oh, hey, Sally. How you doing?
So the Wolfpack Podcast is a show where if you have something smart to say, somebody probably already said it better. It's curation. Where I got the idea from was, a guy named Brad Lominick said that curators are the new influencers, meaning if you just put together a list of things you love for people, you can have an influence on them. My friend Steve bought me a book called New Morning Mercies that really, really had a tremendous impact on my life. And I thought to myself, Steve didn't write the book. He just recommended the book. And it just changed so many things about how I see people and see the world. I thought to myself, wow, there's like some real power in recommendations. So not to say you have to have serious recommendations.
Of course.
It could be a video, you know, resource number one, YouTube, anybody falling on ice. It's the best. I love watching people slip on ice. So that being said, what do you recommend? What have you consumed that has it had an impact on you?
I just want to say I do learn a lot from YouTube, for the record. The person I am going to recommend is prominent on YouTube. I thought about this pretty hard because I didn't want to come with nothing. And originally I was going to recommend a book that I read many years ago called The Obstacle is the Way. Have you heard of this book?
I have it saved. I have not read it.
Okay. So Ryan Holiday, you've had another guest on again, cause I did some research. I didn't want to bring repeat, but who recommended the book? Now I'm blanking out on it. Ego is the Enemy, excuse me, which is another Ryan Holiday
book. Was that
book.
Kyle O'Brien?
I don't know the name. He was the son of your boss at one point.
Was that Carson?
Could have been. Carson. I think it was a while ago.
Ego is the Enemy,
Yeah. And so as I thought about it a little bit more, I think recommending just Ryan Holiday's content in general is probably a better recommendation. You can find him anywhere. He's an author. Obviously, he's written several books. He's Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, you name it.
Yeah.
But what Ryan really talks about and what most of his books are about is Stoicism. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Stoicism. Yeah. It's super helpful stuff. He's a great gateway into Stoicism. If you just picked up, you know, some Marcus Aurelius and tried to read it, it would be arduous, to say the least.
And let me get this straight. Ryan Holiday is Ego is the Enemy.
Yes.
Not The Obstacle is the Way.
He's both. He's written several books.
Gotcha. Okay.
But, you know, generally, I think to sum it up, what I take away mostly from Stoicism and from, you know, Stoic philosophy is just the notion of, it's not about what happens to you. It's about how we control our reaction to that. You know, said another way, like you're not going to be able to control everything that happens. You're going to be exposed to bad things, negative things. But what you certainly can control is how you respond to those things. And, you know, Stoics would say that everything you experience is an opportunity to respond within the virtues of Stoicism, which is, you know, there's four main virtues. But I think generally speaking, it's just the ability to respond, right? And to respond in a way that we control and that we decide. And I think life, generally speaking, is more about how we respond to things than things that actually happen to us. And especially these days, man, it's like there's just so much noise and feedback and criticism and, you know, just understanding how we control our emotions has helped me a ton in business, personal life, you know, marriage, all that sort of stuff.
What do you remember what the four like cardinal virtues are?
Yeah, it's courage, justice, wisdom, and temperance.
Gotcha. Yeah. So Yeah. So like virtue ethics is what.
Yeah. I mean, right? You know, most ancient Greek and Roman philosophy was about virtuous behavior. And, for Stoics, again, I think so much of it is just about, recognizing the things that you can control versus the things that you can't. Mm-hmm. And I think most things that happen to us, we can't control. I mean, again, you could go way down the line and say, well, this happened to me because of a decision I made 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Think about your Vietnam experience, right? Like your reflections there in Saigon, led to by things that happened many years in the past. But there are things that in the moment you can't control the outcome of. And being able to sort of internalize that and recognize, well, what does this mean? How am I going to respond to this? And knowing that this thing has already happened, I can't stop that now, but I certainly can decide what I'm going to take from this, how I'm going to develop to this, how I'm going to let this affect me or not affect me. Again, more important arguably to me than the thing that actually happened.
Yeah.
One of the things that that I've learned from Ryan Holiday is this notion of, the premeditation of evils. I think they call it premeditatio malorum is the Latin phrase, which is basically this idea of envisioning all the negative outcomes. And so it's not a way of like manifesting negative thoughts. Like everybody wants to talk about manifest positive energy,
sure,
and that sort of thing. But it's helped me a ton in business as I go into meetings, proposals, pitches, whatever, high pressure environments, to be able to sit down and try to envision all the potential outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. Where is this conversation going to go based on this one thing, which could lead to 50 different outcomes, right? And I try to envision all of those things so that when inevitably the conversation goes that way, I'm not unprepared. I'm prepared for as many of the outcomes, negative as they may be, just that I'm not caught off guard. I'm prepared.
How conscious is that effort for you at this point?
Very, honestly. Yeah. It really, I mean, again, I think in certain aspects of my life, it's probably subconscious.
Sure.
Even coming here before this podcast, what are all the questions that Tyler might ask me?
Yeah.
I need to be prepared for
with
that.
With that trouble before age 12, it was like you knew I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you know I was going to ask you
that? No, I had no idea. That's I had no so idea. Awesome. Yeah.
You were ready, dude.
I could, listen, sales guy, got to be able to think on my feet, right?
Yeah.
But so I think in a lot of things, it's probably subconscious. In business, when I know that I'm having something important that's coming, I know I'm going to go to a presentation, I'm going to a meeting, there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. I'm certainly going to spend a lot of time reflecting on all of the negative directions that the conversation can go. And I'm probably going to start controlling that from the very first time I open my mouth, just to steer things the way I want them to go, because I know maybe it's going to go this way and I don't want it to go that way.
This is going to sound like I'm biased against making the sale or closing the deal. I don't say that this is a bad thing, but is that framework that you're describing primarily about closing the deal or about protecting yourself?
I think it's about getting to the outcome that's best, to be honest with you. Like I don't tend to look at, I mean, if I'm in a sales situation or a business situation, I'm trying to come to a conclusion that benefits me and the other person.
Yeah.
Negotiation is where on that axis does the benefit spin more? Does it benefit me more? Does it benefit you more? I don't think business is a zero-sum game. I think sales in general, especially when people think of a stereotypical salesperson, they tend to think of it as manipulation and taking advantage of people. I have found most of my success in business by being very transparent with people and not being unwilling to wade into the territories of discomfort and muck and gray, mm-hmm. because I think friction is very healthy for relationships, business or personal. So I don't think it's necessarily about, getting the sale or anything like that. It's about getting to the outcome where we both feel like we win. Everybody feels happy with the outcome, and the result is beneficial for both of us.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, sometimes, people's influences shape them. And so, being in a sales position, you have to understand that sometimes people are unwilling to get out of their own way, mm-hmm. and sometimes will do the thing. You're
talking about the salesman or the client?
The client. Will do things that they think is best for them because of their experiences, that it's not actually what's in their best interest. And so being able to influence the conversation in a way that benefits both of you, even if it's not necessarily what they would have chosen, is also a win and what you owe your customer when you're in a consultative role.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's awesome, man. So that book's had a pretty profound impact on you?
You know, I mean, that book, Ryan in general, I mean, he's, you know, I think if you were to find somebody who really like picked up and studied Meditations by Marcus Aurelius or, you know, Breakfast with Seneca or these really, you know, sort of foundational Stoic readings would maybe say that Ryan's content is, you know, fluffy or surfacey. But like I said, it's a big task. Like I wouldn't be able to pick up Meditations and make sense of it unless it was translated into more common speak. And Ryan does he's a really good representation of that and his ability to translate, you know, some of these ideas that are hundreds of years old into modern day life, right? And to translate them into the challenges that people might be facing personally, professionally. And I think it's super helpful. Mm-hmm. I think it's super helpful. And I don't think he, you know, overcomplicates it in a way that even somebody who wasn't interested in learning about Stoicism could still find benefits from 2-minute sound bites of the things he talks about.
Well, and it's so interesting with all, because there is a new wave of interest in Stoicism. And I think this happens in the church world, which is my world. This happens in, obviously, in just secular philosophy. I think we're seeing that there's so much value in what's ancient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's counter, I don't want to say intuitive, but it's countercultural, even though it is very popular now. But in a way, it is countercultural because we want to go like, hey, let's open our minds. Let's do something new. Let's think in a new way. But I really do believe that the way forward is through the past. Not talking about making the same mistakes twice.
Right.
I'm not talking about any of that.
I think at the end of the day, you know, you had said it when we were talking about grappling. Like, I think we're just apes, right? And it's like, we're just people. 2,000 years, you know, on the scheme of things, like, we're still the same people we were back then. We're still self-interested. You know, people are still, you know, greedy by nature, whatever it is. Like, the same challenges that we're facing people in those times are really the same challenges that we're facing now. We just have a, you know, slightly different world that we live in to go about it. But at the end of the day, the emotions, the process, it's all the same, man. People have not changed over the last couple thousand years, you know.
Yeah.
It's just humans.
Yeah, I agree. Now, were there other resources? What else did you want to recommend? Did you come with other stuff that you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, I think that was my main thing. I mean, there's a ton of content I would tell people to stay away from. If you know, that's not curation. That's
avoidance. Let's do it. What comes to mind for that?
You're going to put me on a soapbox, but I'm like, I'm struggling as somebody who has been really fortunate in life to have good mentors professionally, personally, you know, my parents, great relationships, my wife, all my friends.
Yeah.
But professionally speaking, life development, I've had really good people that I've been fortunate to meet that have helped guide me. And I recognize that not everybody has that. People don't always get good mentors, right? And you can't choose that.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of that and the output of that is these people that run rampant on the internet that are preaching terrible approaches to life personally and professionally, all for my one-time fee, $3,000, and take my course. And I can see this like manifesting in the way, I'll use young men because those are like the type of people I bump into more, where young men are acting in ways in which I can tell they're being programmed. And the way that they're looking at business and the way that they're trying to flaunt materialism and grind and hustle and things that don't actually net out to success in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's driving me crazy. There's so many people getting taken advantage of and I can see it. I don't know what the answer is because there's more people seeking mentorship than there are people who can provide it.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, what I can tell it means is that a lot of people are being taken advantage of, and it's largely coming through social media content creation, and it drives me nuts. So please avoid that stuff.
Yeah, I love it, dude.
And I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're
talking about. I don't know how active you are.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, man. That's present in the church world. It's present in the business world. You know what, I think many of the, there's probably something not great there in my heart with this, but many of the reasons people make the choice to get off of social media are the identical reasons why I choose to stay on. Just some self-indulgent people watching.
Yeah.
A guy you probably know, Andy Elliott.
Yeah, I know
Andy Elliott. I love that dude. And I don't know if I hate him or love him, But I can't look away. I can't look away.
See, like, this. So here's what I would encourage you to do, right?
Yeah.
So, like, as you consume content within that ecosystem, listen to the words that are being said. Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to make this deeper than it is, but like, really process what they're saying.
Yeah.
Then put yourself in the position of a 16-year-old kid who really just wants to be successful,
yeah.
right? And make it, but doesn't know how to go about it. And then try to translate those words into something that actually benefits that young person.
Yeah.
And I promise you, you will not be able to draw those parallels.
Right.
That's what drives me crazy.
Yeah. And to be clear, I'm not saying I love Andy Elliott. I'm saying like, it's so ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. You mean, do you hire people that don't have six packs? Because he won't. So I don't know.
Dude. I sent that exact video. You know, I'm a pastor. I work in the church world. There's this, you know, closing the deal on someone in my world, just to take that business language,
right.
would be, it's hard to go home at the end of a day's work and know if you did a good job for me, you know, because yeah. you're not closing the deal. I use that really gross language to make a point. But when someone makes a choice, whether it's like full surrender of their life into the hands of God, or it's taking steps towards freedom from addiction or something like that. Anyways, I sent that six-pack video to somebody. I said, maybe this is how we start doing things. Maybe this is what we do on a Sunday morning. You're like,
yeah, listen, you're out. All right. Yeah. Nobody else. And I get it, because I think what you're saying is, you know, you don't have a lot of metrics to base success on.
Yeah.
Is that right? Like, there's not, you can't quantify, did I make 200 cold calls today? Did I generate $50,000 in new business?
Right.
Did I sign up 10 people for my gym?
Right.
Whatever it is, right? You don't have that luxury.
Well, even if I measure things, then the church gets a really bad rep. If I go, wow, man, we grew the church from 100 people to 300 people. In any other world, mm-hmm. any other line of work, people would go, amazing.
Yeah.
Good job. In my world, I say we went from 100 to 300 people go, oh, that's all you care about is numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now you probably can't focus on really delivering as much value to those 100 because there's 300.
All
so
right.
So how do you, I mean, how are you defining success day to day, or even over the course of 1 year, 2 years?
There actually are some more fairly measurable things. First of all, I mean, we're talking about things in the spirit, things are spiritual in nature. And so by definition of Christianity, I am not the person creating the change in someone's life. But I would say there's good signs that I can look for. If someone, it takes a lot for someone to talk about their relationship with God with others, because people are very self-conscious about these things.
Sure.
And so if someone comes to me and shares with me, hey, I was able to actually, I saw someone who was really hurting, and I was able to share with them about a time that my relationship with God helped me when I was also hurting. I go, that's just an example of a measuring stick, right?
Yeah.
You know, that took a lot of courage, and that's hard for people. It's usually very easy for people when they first become a Christian.
Yeah.
And then there's this huge in-between space where it's very difficult. So that's just one example.
Well, and I'm sure you wouldn't, you know, as you think about your experiences with religion, it, you know, obviously profound impact on your life,
yeah.
pulled you from some depths.
Right.
You wouldn't want that to be a statistic necessarily. You're not a quantifiable measure on, you know, God's scoreboard, I guess,
right.
so to speak. You know,
you're a
story, right? There's more to it than just numbers. But I get
right.
it. I mean, it can make, you know, to go hang your hat up at the end of the day and say, yeah,
yeah.
I really earned that one today.
Right.
You know, it's,
right.
It's,
well, at the end of the day, I want to help people see who they really, really are. See their value, who they are in the eyes of God. And that is really hard to measure, whether someone successfully did that. Because you probably heard Christians say, you know, God told me this and blah, 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 blah. And I actually do believe that we can hear from God, but I also think even our ears are flawed.
Yeah.
And so though God may speak to a person, I believe that God will speak to somebody who doesn't even believe that he's real.
Yeah.
I truly do. But our ears are still flawed.
Right.
So even when someone hears from God, like, oh, well, you need to do the work. Just understand that you may, for lack of a better term, and I sound so judgmental when I say this, you may have heard wrong.
Fair.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've had people call me up from the airport and say, God told me to move to Europe. And I'm going, don't do that. Take your medication and come back and let's get coffee. And
is that what you wanted to hear, or is that what you actually did?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, man.
Calf cram. With that, you got anything else, man?
No, I'm good when you are, man.
Yeah, good talk. Thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it.
All right, man. I'll see you at the gym.
Thanks, man.
Yep.